Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
And good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
And this is Jean Marie Schaefer.
And we're two of the attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to answer your questions about estate planning, estate administration, and Medicaid planning. And if you want to be the first caller, the phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And you can be our very first caller. Good morning, Jean Marie.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. We got the girls all together here today on the radio. We got Candace, right?
Oh, hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Ben got the day off.
I know. Ben gets to have a little anniversary time with his lovely wife. I think that he deserves that day, that morning, to sleep in a little bit.
So good for him. Wherever you are, Ben, I hope you're having a good time.
Right? Sleeping until 6, because that's late for him.
It sounds good. So are you all set for the holidays, Jean Marie?
Oh, no, of course not. There's still 2 weeks left. There's time to do shopping.
True.
Right.
You know, the perfect gift.
I don't have to make shop for a big crowd, unfortunately. So just food for the four of us. But I am, everyone who usually comes, I'm going to mail them a little basket of stuff to make them feel like they're still here. So that's what I'm planning on doing this weekend.
That's nice. It's very nice. They were saying that you had to have your stuff to the post office or wherever, like by the 15th, if you wanted it to actually get there by Christmas this year. So
I heard that. So that's what I'm working towards. Got to get it out by Tuesday. That's right.
Sounds good. So a lot of people, you know, if you're looking for that perfect gift for your family and your loved ones, an estate plan would be a perfect gift. Don't you think, Jean Marie?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Maybe not the thing that's on your wish list, but it is a good gift to get. And actually, I've had a lot of parents over the years pay for estate plans for their adult children.
I have two. And it's funny because the kids don't think about it. And I've had a lot of younger couples that have young kids that have been coming in and doing estate planning because they realize that all of a sudden that, you know, they've got the 2.2 kids and the dog in the house, and that they've got to make sure that things are protected and that they have the guardianship in place and the trust in place for the kids. Because I was on the phone with a gentleman, actually it was a Zoom call, and he said, well, what if I don't do anything? And I said, well, then something happens to you and your wife, your kids, who are, I think it's 8 and 2, when they're 18, are going to get all of this money.
Mm-hmm.
What? I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. You can only keep it from when they're 18. I'm like, 18-year-olds generally aren't very good with money.
No, they're not. Not at all. I have an 18-year-old, actually, so I know.
Hey, ladies, I don't mean to interrupt, but we got a couple callers on the line. We're going to start you off right now with Rich from Germantown.
Hey, Rich.
Yeah, I've got a question, real quick question for you. I don't know if it pertains to what your docket this morning, what's on the agenda, but you sound very knowledgeable. Here's my question to you. I have my nephew, mom passed away, and he was, she had him as beneficiary for his pension, and he's collecting SSI. Can he still get that? Can he still collect that? I mean, or be united on SSI or?
It depends. I mean, probably that's going to be, it depends on how much the pension is. It may be too high, so that may kick him off of SSI or reduce the amount that he's getting. Is it an actual pension or is it something like an IRA that is a...
No, it's going to continue for pension, but his name is beneficiary. It's like $1,600 a month. And I think he gets $1,000. And he gets $1,000 a month from SSI. He had asked me to call. He's a little, you know, not too swift with phone call. And he asked me to call you and see what you had to say about that.
It's going to reduce his payments. So that's something I could, if you want to call on Monday, I could do the calculation, but they have a calculation of what they call unearned income.
If I think of it, I'll call. But yeah. it would definitely reduce his monthly amount.
So you can give our office a call. It's 518-476-7580.
Okay, very well. Thank you so much.
I mixed up the phone number for the station.
What number is that, Jay Marie?
I'm looking at the 476 for the radio call, and that's right in front of me. I'm sorry, I mixed those two together.
So the phone number at the office is 518-465-7581.
Great. We have one more caller here on the line for you. We're going to get you into Joe from Kingston.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. First time, long time. Thank you very much for taking my call. My question is, my wife and I are doing our will, and what's the best way to include our son, who's a recovering addict, in our will? We don't want to leave him a lot of money, one lump sum, that is. And I've heard, for example, maybe doing a W-2, an equal amount each year like that, doing some sort of trust. That makes a lot of sense. But what's in the, in the case of a disability, that's not his fault or whatever. So there's a lot of different nuances. I'm not quite sure what's the best approach. Thank you.
Well, it depends on the situation. I mean, we have all kinds of different types of trusts that we can set up so that if your son inherited money, we've set up trusts before where they have to test, right? They have to have a drug test, and they have to test negative. We have trusts where they say that the person gets a distribution equal to their W-2 each year so that they actually have to work to be able to get distribution. It just depends on the specific situation. If he's not disabled, right, if he can work and everything like that, then you probably wouldn't want to put it into a special needs trust. But there's what's called a discretionary principal and income trust, and you can say that the person gets distributions at certain ages, but if the trustee saw that they needed money or something like that, the trustee would be able to make distributions to them. So everything would be made based on your specifications. There's really not one cookie-cutter trust that would be set up for this type of situation. Every situation is different. So I would suggest that you come in or give us a call. We can meet over the phone or by Zoom and discuss what the situation is and figure out what would be best for you. What do you think, Jay Marie?
Yeah, I've done trust like that, like you were saying, where it's we put in a requirement that there be annual, drug or alcohol screening done before a distribution could be made. And also we could just limit the distributions to a certain amount every year so that, the trustee has control over that. And then you can give the trustee control to give more money on an as-needed basis. So I think those are some good ideas to do in a situation like that.
Okay. It sounds like, to have this kind of, foolproof, waterproof, mm-hmm. it almost has to be all-inclusive. It can make the will extremely long. It almost be like a flow chart, if not this way. Mm-hmm. There's so many loopholes I envision anyway that can, mm-hmm. That can kind of poke holes into this type of will. Especially if he has a disability that's brought on by his own behavior, for example, that's something that I would have to sit down with you and discuss as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, it doesn't sound like it's a very easy answer. It sounds like it's pretty complex.
Yeah, it's not necessarily something we can give you a solid answer for over the radio. We'd really need to look at all the moving pieces, because a lot of it would depend on what kind of assets you have, too. If you're just talking money that's coming, just basic stocks and bonds and stuff like that we could have in a trust versus retirement accounts, because you're going to have to treat that completely differently.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we have both. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
I had like a flurry of calls there. How about that? So if you want to be our next one, it's 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And I thought I would mention that we have webinars. Our week of webinars is coming up starting Monday at 2 o'clock, and it's 2 o'clock every day next week. We have Elder Law Basics. That's 2 o'clock on Monday. On Tuesday, Legal and Financial Planning for Alzheimer's Disease. Now, is that the one that you're doing, Jane Marie?
Yes, I'm doing that, and we're presenting that along with the Alzheimer's Association. So that's a really great webinar. There'll be myself, and there'll be Kim, our geriatric care manager, and someone from the Alzheimer's Association.
That's great. A lot of good information there. Mm-hmm. And then Wednesday, December 16th, is Wills versus Trust, always a favorite. People are always, well, if I have a trust, do I need a will? If I need a will, do I need a trust? So that's always a good one. And Aging in Place, which we're all doing right now. We're sitting here aging in place. That's on Thursday, December 17th at 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, on Friday, December 18th, How to Plan Your Estate. So those, you can register for those. All you have to do is log on to our website at www.herzoglaw.com, and you can register for any of the webinars. Or if you have trouble logging on, you can give Stacy. She loves to walk people through it. You can call Stacy at the office. She's at 518-465-7581. She's at extension 126, but we'd love for you guys to join us. A lot of good questions that we get after the webinars. It was fun when we used to do them in person, and people could just start asking questions, we could answer them. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, it's a little bit harder when they're on a webinar.
It's a little bit harder, but we give them the choice of either typing in a question, or I've been letting just people ask questions, by unmuting themselves and asking. It's hard because you can't see them to see who's going to ask first, but Zoom has this little function where you can raise your hand.
I know, that's hilarious.
So you can pick on the person who raised their hand, so that works kind of nicely.
I know, and it's like, now not everyone unmute yourself at one time, but whoever it was that raised their hand, you can unmute yourself and ask your question.
That's right. Sometimes everyone's talking, but that's okay. And yeah, also, I mean, if you don't have a computer, you can also just call in and listen to the webinar. I know some of our clients do that who may not be so good at technology.
Right. And some people have watched it on their cell phone. I've seen people that watch it on their cell phone.
That's right.
So, you know, it's a great opportunity to just sit back from the comfort of your home and listen to the webinars. It's really good information. And if you're not available, if you have some pressing engagement at 2 in the afternoon and you're going to miss one of the webinars, you can actually go to our website, which again is www.herzoglaw.com. Go on the blog page, and you can watch the webinars at your leisure, right? Kind of like Netflix. You can pause it, go get a snack, whatever you need.
That's right. Have a glass of wine while you watch it.
That's it. Put some logs on the fire. Everyone in the family, let's gather around and watch Wills versus Trusts. But anyway, it's something that a lot of people, it's interesting because when they call and they ask questions, when they talk to Stacy, and Stacy will be like, you know what, you have a lot of questions, and probably your best bet is to go online and watch one of these webinars and then kind of figure out, give yourself kind of a game plan as to what you want to do and the questions that you're going to need to ask, and then give us a call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. You can watch it. Some people like to watch it before they come in so they feel like a little educated, so they know what they're getting into and what questions to ask us when they see us.
Right. There's one on there for what to do when a loved one dies. And that one, I've had a lot of people told me that they have watched that one because someone passed away and they're like, okay, what do we have to do? Let's quickly figure out what we need to do. So they're all on there. And a lot of them, you know, have been pre-recorded. Most of the ones that we're doing are on there, so just go to our website and you can watch them. Or if you want to watch them live, again, 2 o'clock every day this week, Monday through Friday. We'll be live doing our webinars, and you can log on and you can ask questions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we'd love to get some more calls in here. We had a flurry of calls, but we don't have one right now. How about one for 518-476-5900? That's 518-476-5900. So, Jay Marie, any interesting situations that you came across this week?
Oh, I seem to be very busy with the guardianships lately, which goes back to why it's so important to get estate planning documents in place. So another case this week where the niece of the lady. The lady is in a nursing home, and she's really funny. We had her on the phone. She's in there for rehabilitation. But when we talked to her, she said, "I'm here for rejuvenation. I'm getting rejuvenated." So that was cute. So that kind of gave us some indication that she's not quite all there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks she's in for a spa treatment and that she's going to leave soon and go home and then go out to eat, you know. But she didn't have any documents in place. And her husband has some dementia also, and he can't really take care of things. So this is a case where we are going to have to go to court to have a guardian appointed to let the niece take care of things for her. I mean, luckily the rehab place is talking to the niece right now, but she doesn't really have any legal authority to do anything in terms of paying her bills or placing her, you know, in another facility. I met her yesterday and she brought me a giant bag of bills from the house. You know, there are lots of bills that are unpaid, things that are being canceled because no one's been doing this.
Wow, that's difficult.
Mm-hmm. It's really tough because also the niece doesn't really know a lot about their financial affairs or their bills, right? So it's a little bit scary to kind of step into that and try and take over everything. But, you know, we're helping her through that, looking through the bills and the accounts, and we're going to help her with all that once she gets appointed as a guardian. Which I expect that will go through with no problem. But even in a case like this where she's I think she's the only surviving relative, and she'll most likely be appointed and there won't be anyone contesting it, it's going to be thousands of dollars to go to court and have a guardian appointed for the lady.
Right, and it would have been solved if she'd just done a simple power of attorney.
Absolutely, it would have. So it's really important to get those done, even when you're young. You know, we say that once you're 18, you should have one. And my 18-year-old actually finally got some interest in what I do, which is kind of funny. I was talking about this, and I said, "Oh, you should have one too." And he's like, "Well, what are those? You know, what does the healthcare proxy do? What does the power of attorney do?" So we talked about it, and I said, "Yeah, you need to sign one." He's like, "Oh, okay, you know." They never pay attention to what you really talk about most of the time.
No, I made Zach do his before he went away to college. He didn't have a choice. I'm like, sign here. What is this? Just sign. Don't worry about it. Anyway. No, we did explain it to him. But, you know, it's kind of scary. You think about these things, and you got to be really careful about who you appoint, too. I've had a lot of situations now where I have clients coming back in that they had each other appointed first, you know, husband and wife appointed as power of attorney, and now they're aging in place. And right. So they're like, you know, he's been diagnosed with a cognitive impairment. He's not going to be able to make my decisions for me anymore. I need to move the kids up, right? The kids mm-hmm. were the backups, and now I need to move them up. And so a lot of them, and they don't want dad to be embarrassed that he's been removed, right? So what they'll do is they'll put dad or son or daughter, so any of the three could act, and that way dad's still there, but he, mm-hmm. you know, they can step up and take care of things.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it because he doesn't want to feel like he's being removed from anything, but in reality mm-hmm. the kids can do something because they have equal authority to the dad. So that lets him save face, right?
It does, and there's a lot of different things that you can do. And we try to make it as easy as possible, but these are things that you need to think about, especially if you did your documents about 20 years ago. Are the mm-hmm. people that you appointed 20 years ago, are those still the people that you want to be making decisions for you? And even with young people that have appointed, you know, say they appointed his or her parents as guardians mm-hmm. of the kids, yeah. and the kids at the time were newborn, and now all of a sudden the kids are 10, and mom and dad are 10 years older than they were, would your parents mm-hmm. really be able to take care of your young children? So that's a thought.
Yeah. Yeah, usually people may have to switch it to someone younger, to maybe their brother or their sister or someone at their age, in to take on some of those roles. So that's a good thing, or that's a good reason to come in and review your documents every couple of years. Because things change. You don't always think about updating your estate planning documents, right? That's not high on everyone's list. But when you actually sit down and look at it after 5 or 10 years, you realize there's a lot of changes to make.
There are. We always tell our people they should look at their documents every 5 years. A lot of people don't.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So, but if something happens, you know, say something happens to your parents, one of your parents passes away, are they? Mm-hmm. Is the surviving parent going to be able to be the guardian? You know, and also if you had them as the trustee once they're getting older, are they going to be able to make good financial decisions for your child? So these are things I always say, you know, you need backup.
Right. So, that's right. When so you first do it, there's the name two free backups, right? That's
right.
Yeah, that gets you through a lot of things.
You know, you need
a lot of people coming in lately that, you know, their documents are 20 years old. I don't know why that seems mm-hmm. to be like the time frame, and maybe it's because that's when they had their kids and their kids are kind of grown up, but you know, 20 years ago is a long time. Like, those powers of attorney are out of date, you know. You really need to get those documents updated if it's been that long.
Definitely. And I've got people that have adult children. I had people that came in the other day and their child is 21, and mm-hmm. they said if something happened to, I mean, they're obviously not worried about a guardian, but only child, and they said, you know, he's 21 years old. He doesn't even know how to write a check, right? Because we use Venmo and auto pay and this and that. And they said if this money was dumped in his lap, it's like, oh, my gosh, you know, what's going to happen? So they were actually looking at setting it up so that the money would go into a trust for him until he was maybe 30. And not because he's immature or anything. It's just that they wouldn't want someone to take advantage of him.
Right, right. And he was not used to handling that amount of money. So if you name a trustee, that could be a time for that person to kind of learn how to manage money, meet with a financial advisor, learn how to write a check. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. my kids don't know what checks are. They do Venmo all the time. So maybe checks are going to go away, Debbie, and maybe we'll just be out of date.
Yeah, I think that might be a possibility.
I think
we may be out of date.
We may be out of date. We're going to have to Venmo, you know?
I don't do that, and I don't have it. And if I'm in a group and then they want a contribution, my friend Shelly has one, I just give her the money. I'm like, here, just take care of this for me because I can't do this. Anyway, So if you guys want to be, well, we're actually going to go to the break here in a few minutes, but we might have time for one more call before the break. But Jay Marie and I can just talk about everything. We've got lots of interesting things that happen, lots of interesting situations that come in, and people are like, have you ever had this happen before? Or they're like, have you see this all the time, right?
Yeah, that's right. The other thing I get a question often is if we're doing a will and they're like deciding who gets the tangible personal property. They're like, well, do people ever fight about this? I'm like, all the time. It's really good if you think your kids are going to fight about that to make it very clear who gets what so there's no fighting later on.
Right, and don't put post-it notes on them. the glue doesn't stay and it falls off. So
right. Your kids can switch it, right? So
they can switch it, you know, and putting magic marker on the bottom of furniture, again, yep. not really a good choice. But, you know, you can make a list. We have a sample that's called a gift letter that spells out a lot of this stuff. You know, I want this ring to go to this one, and I want the, and you can change it anytime you want to. But you know, if you have an only child like I do, he's already told me that he's just going to back the dumpster up to the house and just clean it out.
That's very rude.
I said that for him one night. He goes, no, I'll sell the good stuff first. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes me feel a little bit better.
Okay, good. He's going to sell and get some money. That's good. And he's going to take Nellie, right? So.
Oh, yeah. He would take the dog. Definitely take the dog. So,
okay. That'd
be the first priority. She'd be in the truck first.
Speaking of dogs, and a lot of people do pet trusts for their animals, you know, to make sure that they're well taken care of after they're gone.
Oh, definitely. And I had one person that they had a dog that was young but had a lot of medical issues. And mm-hmm. So what they did, they said, when I pass away, I want my dog to go to, and it was a specific animal hospital. And then mm-hmm. It said that whoever adopts my dog gets $10,000, but you can't tell the person before they adopt it. So the person passed, and this nice family came in and adopted the dog, and then they had the dog for like a month, and then we sent them the check for $10,000. They're like, hello? We're like, yeah, you know, they wanted to make sure that the dog was taken care of and that you were able to afford the meds and everything. So they adopted this dog, even though it had these medical problems, and then they got the $10,000.
That's really nice. They made sure they just loved the dog, right, and didn't worry about the money. So that's pretty nice.
They were going to ditch the dog, get the dog, and then ditch it after they got the money. So
that's,
no.
That's right. Not going to spend any of the money on the dog. I'm going to keep it, right? So hopefully you don't do that.
So I think we're going to go to our break right now. So we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half hour of the Herzog Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Debbie Verney.
And I'm Jean Marie Schaefer.
And we're here for the next half hour. We had a flurry of calls in the beginning of the first section, but then they kind of went away. So we're waiting for our next caller. And the phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And before we went to the break, we were talking about powers of attorney and other documents. And it's interesting. I just thought of this. I had a client this week that they need a new power of attorney. And the person that they're going to appoint is coming in from out of state. And I'm like, yeah, I can't meet with you.
Right.
So they had decided that they would just download a form off the Internet.
Uh-huh.
And so they said, I can do that, right? And I'm like, yeah, no, you don't want to do that, especially if there's questions about the person being incapacitated. You got to make sure that you have the correct form and you have the statutory gifts writer, because it's not going to do you any good to have a power of attorney unless you have the statutory gifts writer. Right, Jean Marie?
That's right. The regular power of attorney only lets you gift up to $500. So you need a statutory gift writer to make larger gifts. And, you know, we tell clients, it's not just so you can go out and buy yourself something nice. It's usually used in conjunction with planning with a trust. And you actually need that gift writer to either set up a trust or put money in a trust. And that can be really important to do for someone when they become incapacitated. You may want to put money in a trust to protect it and try and get them eligible for Medicaid.
Right, and people are like, well, why would I want to give them the option to have that much money? I don't want to give them that much power. Well, you can make co-powers of attorney, right? If you want to have checks and balances, then, you know, name your son and your daughter. Name your husband and your son or whatever, and they both have to sign off. And that way there's checks and balances. Generally, it's not an issue, but I can understand why people wouldn't want to give that kind of power away.
Yeah, no, I can understand. It's a power to give away basically a lot, unlimited amounts of money, you know. So, but you have to really trust the person you're appointing. You know, sometimes you don't really have a lot of choices, you know, so maybe you do want to put a little checks and balances on there. But hopefully you have your family that you can trust to do this for you later on. You know, but it is a lot of power, which is why you have that whole gift rider, which is really long, and it has to be witnessed and notarized. And that makes our whole power of attorney really long. It's about 14 pages long, right?
Right. It's, people are like, really? And I'm like, yeah, it takes me longer to do a power of attorney with someone now than it does a will.
Yeah. So that's the hard document to get through.
It is. And, you know, it's one of those things where you really, really need it and you should have it. And if you don't, then it's really messy and you end up with a guardianship like Jay Marie. Jay Marie is the one in our office that ends up doing most of the guardianship. So, right. You know, you're better off getting a power of attorney, getting it in place, and then making sure that you have the right people in place.
Yes, absolutely. And you have to make sure you're using the right power of attorney, because like you said, with the forms on the internet, sometimes people just, well, download the wrong forms, right? Because they don't know what the right form is. Because I've had clients come in with the old New York power of attorney.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, pre-2009. Or sometimes there's a generic power of attorney. It's not the New York statutory one. So that's why you have to really, you shouldn't get documents online because you don't know that they're going to be good.
Now, I had a person bring in a, it was a power of attorney that the bank does. A lot of the banks and brokerage firms have a specific power of attorney that they use just for their accounts. And so they brought it in, and they were all so proud of themselves. They're like, yes, I have a power of attorney. And I looked at it, I'm like, no, you don't. like whatever, you know, whatever bank this is that you did it at, you have one there, but you don't have one that's going to work. And it was called a general power of attorney. And so they're like, well, I don't understand. And then they're like, well, what's the difference between a general power of attorney and a durable power of attorney?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's confusing. Just because they call it a general power of attorney doesn't mean it is. The durable power of attorney, that's created under New York statute, and the New York statute has a specific form that it has to be in, and you have to follow that. I was going over that power of attorney with some clients, and they were like, well, can we take this out? I'm like, no. Can we take this out? Why does this have to be in here? I'm like, that's all the statute. You have to leave all that language in. Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely don't have a choice on that. It's like, I told you so. Why do I have to do this? Because New York told you so.
New York is even so specific, down to the font size, you know, I remember. So when that first came out, it was kind of crazy. You couldn't change the size of the font or unbold certain things. You have to leave it exactly as it is.
I know, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That's absolutely crazy. Nuts. But we'd love to get a caller this half hour. If you want to give us a call at 518-476-5900, that's 518-476-5900.
I've also had clients, you know, ask a lot of questions about healthcare proxies and living wills lately. You know, I think a lot of people are going through the living will language very carefully, maybe because of COVID, it's making them think about it more. So that's an important part of the healthcare proxy, to look at that language and make sure it really reflects what you would want. You know, our living will language gets into, you know, of course, whether you would want a DNR or not, but it can get into, like, antibiotics, pain medicine, nutrition, hydration, all these different things, and when you would want them and when you wouldn't want them.
Right. It's interesting. We have I have a friend that she and her husband, it's second marriage, just got married about a month and a half ago. right before the numbers started spiking again. And her husband became ill. He ended up in the hospital. He had COVID. He ended up in the hospital. He was in the hospital for 2 weeks. And she was just like, oh, my gosh. You know, we didn't do any planning. You know, you think about it. You're older and you get married. It's a second marriage and you think you have everything under control. She can't get a hold of him, obviously. I mean, she can talk to him on the phone and stuff, but he was in ICU because his oxygen levels were so low. And she's like, you know, does he have bills I need him to pay? Do I have access to his accounts? Do we have any, you know, do we have anything like this? And she was like freaking out. And I'm like, well, obviously you need to come see me. We'll get this taken care of. But it's one of those things that you don't think about. But we have a caller. How about that? We have Karen from Slingerlands. Karen?
Hi. My question is kind of simple, but I'm sure it's not. But anyway, the question is, so my parents have passed, and at this point, there was no will for my mother. So I've taken care of my mother all her life. As long story short, my brother was appointed the law guardian, to my dismay. He had never visited her, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we're awaiting the dividing up of this estate. And I know about a lot of things that were not ever talked about from the paperwork that was sent to me. And how are there checks and balances to know how this goes about where you didn't stick a few thousand here under the table? I mean, I'm not accusatory or anything. I'm just saying that when it's all done and said, what are my rights to know as a beneficiary that it's been divided up legally and properly?
Well, you have a way to find that out. And as a beneficiary, you can request an accounting from the executor. And that's going to show you what all the assets are that he collected and what bills he paid. And then you have a chance to ask questions about that. So that would be the time. And if you think there's something missing from that list, you would ask about that. And you can do this informally, or you can do this formally through the courts by asking an accounting through the courts. But you do have a remedy for that to try and find out what happened to certain things.
Do I have to get a lawyer for this? Because I just know, since I was the one taking care of them all the time, about different things, like there's property that's never been mentioned in the accounting.
It's probably a good idea to get an attorney, especially if you have to do a formal accounting through the court, because that is hard to do on your own. But yes, you would just, I mean, if you wanted to do it on your own, you would ask the other lawyer for an accounting of the assets. But if you do think there are things missing, I think you should have a lawyer involved.
If there are things that are missing, would that be considered like the person's not doing their job? Or, I mean, what happens point?
Ultimately, if it turns out that that person is hiding things or things are missing, that person could be removed as the executor. And then there's a remedy, it's called a surcharge, where they would be, their share would be charged for the money that, if they took the money, right? So they are held accountable for all that money, and they have to show the court what they did with it.
Now, the other thing I want to say is in New York state law, well, how much does the executor get automatically? How do they figure out what their fee is for the executor's fee?
There's a statute that gives a percentage for the commission. It's basically 5% of the estate, 2.5%. Well, it's a total of 5% based on the total assets of the estate. Now, you have to remember that. Yeah,
I'm sorry, it was a breakup there. It said 5%, and it's
the whole of the estate. There are some assets that aren't counted as the estate, so if there's something that has a beneficiary on it, that goes outside of the estate. But in general, anything that's in the estate gets a 5% commission.
And if there was money owed to me prior to my mother's death from the law guardian, how can I receive that? They've never told me how I can. I've sent him the paperwork, and he's not said nothing about it.
So if there's money that's owed to you, that's either going to be, that could be settled in the estate. You know, you would say that's a claim against the estate. And you put in a claim and see, you know, if it's, if it gets paid. If it doesn't get paid, that's something else to question in the accounting.
Okay, so that should be entered into the accounting at this point?
Yes.
Right, you could file a claim against the estate. If it's money that was owed to you before the person passed away, you can actually file a claim at the courthouse, and then they'll give them notice that you filed a claim, and that claim would have to be settled, whether they pay you or whatever, before they're going to be able to close out the estate.
Okay, so that would be another problem, that if they did not enter that?
Well, you're the one that would file it. I mean, the court's not, if there's a creditor that files a claim with the court, right, the court will not let them close out the estate, meaning file the closing paperwork with the court, until that claim has a release.
Okay. How long does the whole process take? I mean, since it's COVID, I could it take over a year?
Oh, yeah, it easily could take a year, even without COVID, yeah. An estate has to stay open for at least 7 months to allow creditors to file claims, so that's the minimum, so it wouldn't be unusual for an estate to take a year to close.
So I have to file this claim immediately, or do I? The accountings mm-hmm. have come in, but they did not come in from this past year yet, because it's not done.
Yeah, you have to file your claim within 7 months of the date of death.
I had to file it by, what was that again?
Within 7 months.
Of the date of death.
Oh. When she died?
Yes.
Well, I don't know how that would happen, because I didn't even submit it since March, and she passed away in November. So does that mean I will not get the money?
Probably not. I mean, this is getting into some, you know, there may be some exceptions to that. I think you should probably call the office if you want to get more into the details of this. It sounds like it's a complicated case, you know. Okay. And we can talk to you and give you a free consultation, okay?
Okay. All right, thank you for your help.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, see, those are great questions. And, you know, if you don't really know what's going on when someone passes away, I mean, I guess the thing is, too, you've got to understand that some people keep waiting and waiting and waiting to get information on someone's estate, and there may not be an estate, right? If, like you said, Jay Marie, if everything has beneficiaries or it's joint, then mm-hmm. they're never going to have to go to the court, and so you're never going to get notice.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes people come in, they're like complaining about an estate or they want to contest it. But then when you look at it, you know, maybe there was nothing to go through the estate, that things were joints or they had beneficiaries on them. Now, if you think that was done improperly, that's a whole other proceeding you have to do. It's not part of the estate. So it can be complicated, right? So you have to... you have to know what the assets of the estate were. You have to know what assets were outside of the estate. And that's something that we do every time we meet with you when we do an estate administration, is really to see how all the assets were held. And joint assets and beneficiaries, they, you know, are not handled with the will.
And I had an interesting situation, and it's funny because this is the first time I've come across this. We filed a will for probate. There was only one account. Most of the money was in the trust. So we filed the will for probate, and come to find out, the surrogate court had an original will on file. It was the will before the one that this person did. So the new will obviously says, I hereby revoke all prior wills before me. Mm-hmm. But there was a person that was listed as a beneficiary in the will that the surrogate court had on file, and we have to give them notice.
Right, because they were named in that prior will, and since the court had it, right, they have to give them notice. That's interesting.
That's just wild, because if you do a will, I mean, the first line in the will says, I hereby revoke any prior wills before me. So theoretically, mm-hmm. you've revoked that old will, but there's a certain rule that says that if they've filed an original will with the court and then the person passes, that they mm-hmm. have to notify the people that were in the original will. I just, and if all the years I've been doing this, that was the very first time I was like, wow.
Yeah, that is different, right? Which is kind of a good reason not to register your wills, because that's a question I often get after we do the will signing. Well, are you going to file this now with the court? And my answer is always, no, you don't file it with the court until you pass away and we're probating your will. That's a good reason, another good reason not to do that. And the reason is that you could change your will many times before you die, so why file it with the court ahead of time?
Well, this one had the ex-wife on it, too. So that was kind of interesting. So, well, you know, they automatically don't take because they're divorced. But, you know, it was just one of those things where I was like, wow. And the only way generally that a will gets filed with the court, and I tell people this, they're like, well, what happens if your law firm goes out of business? And I'm like, well, if the law firm, if we decided to fold up the law firm, we would notify everyone we had the original documents and they could come and get them. Or if we sold out to another law firm, we would tell them. But if we can't find the people, then we would file them with the surrogates court.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So wills do get filed with the court ahead of time, but it's not that common, right? Like, we don't find that happening. Actually, I don't think it's ever happened with any of my estates that there was a will filed previously.
This is my first. I was shocked. I was just like, really? But there you go, right? So it just proves you just never know these little things. But my goal is whenever I meet with people, I say to them, look, I don't ever want to probate your will. I don't want to ever have to go through court. I will if I have to. But what we need to do is look at your assets and make sure that they have beneficiaries, make sure that they have contingent beneficiaries, or that everything is joint, or it is in a trust. Because I want everything to be seamless whenever you pass away. I had the daughter of one of my clients come in the other day. Her mom had passed, and the mom left 25%. Well, she left the house to her, and then 25% to her, 25% to her brother, and then 25% to each of her grandkids. Mm-hmm. And we were going through everything, and we're like, okay, so we're going to deed the house over to you as the trustee. So you sign as trustee, you sign it over to yourself. And then it was interesting because her daughter that's receiving 25%, mm-hmm. she gets 12.5% outright and 12.5% in trust until she's 55.
Oh, my gosh.
That's and grandma named the younger brother as her trustee. Mm. And I was like, and how do they get along right now?
I know, that's not really so great, right?
But the mother was, she thought it was hilarious. You know, she thought it was hilarious because the daughter's only like 30. she's only going to get half of her money. But, you know, it's, and whenever she came in and we kind of went through things, she goes, that's it? That's all we've got to do? And we're like, yeah, that's all we've got to do. And she goes, you know, I really need this exact same thing. And I'm like, yes, you do. You need this exact same thing. So she's mm-hmm. going to come in and do her estate planning. But it was just funny that I was starting to think about what would happen if something happened to my parents and my sister was my trustee,
my younger sister.
I'm thinking, not so good.
I would not want to be that trustee, right? Well, sometimes parents do that when the wills when the kids are younger. And, you know, they may think someone's not so responsible with money, but then that kind of changes as they get older. So that's another reason to come in and update your will, because maybe at 25 you're not as mature with money as you would be at 35, right?
True.
Right now, I leave money in trust for my kids until they're like 15, right? But that may change over time. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the kids, when they're young, you don't want to put that kind of pressure on them either. Mm-hmm. You know, if they can't have access to it, then they don't have to worry about, you know, and it's sad, people taking advantage of them. Because mm-hmm. when you're young and you're the one with all the money and you're the person that, you know, I have the new car because I have the money and I can pay to go out to restaurants and stuff, mm-hmm. and people are going to take advantage of you.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, once they know that you have an inheritance, they're going to be either asking for loans or trying to go on vacations with you, right? So it's to protect them as well, you know, from other people.
Definitely. So kind of like the caller that called in at the beginning of the hour asking about, you know, they may have a child that has a drug problem. Well, there's way to protect the money for a person that has drug problems and alcohol problems and spending problems. So there's more than one way to, as they say, tie the person's hand. You don't really want the dead hand controlling everything, but if there's someone that has issues, you want to make sure that they're protected.
Right, that's right. You want to make sure they're protected if maybe they don't have, you know, such good judgment, right? So you want to, it's not that you don't want them to have the money. You just want someone to oversee how they spend the money and make sure it's not being wasted.
Yeah, and then you need to make sure that the person that you appoint as trustee actually wants to be their trustee, because I've had that happen too, where you have a person that's been appointed trustee and they're like, oh no. Yeah, no, I don't want to do, no, not this job. What happens if I resign? Who, you know, who steps up? Who will this be? Because, you know, they never, no one ever discussed it with them. It's like, surprise, you're trustee.
That's right, that's right. Yeah, now it's definitely important to talk about this with the people you pick. So I always ask, you know, are you going to go talk to the people we, you know, we talked about, who you want to be, your executor, your power of attorney, your trustee? You really should talk to them and let them know that they, it's something they want to do.
Ladies, I hate to interrupt, but we have another caller. We want to make sure we get her in before the end of our show tonight. This is Elaine from Ballston Spa.
Good morning.
What can we help you with?
Hi. I have a question. It's more curiosity than anything, but we're retired, and I've kind of always heard you should take the money that's in your 401k and just roll it into an IRA. I know that, you know, you have, they have to withhold taxes and things like that, but I'm wondering if there's another advantage of keeping the money in the 401k. For example, I've heard if you're ever sued, they can't take any money from a 401k. Those types of advantages, not really basic monetary advantages. Do you know of any, or are there any?
Well, in terms of the asset protection, an IRA is going to be protected as well. I mean, usually the difference is that the 401k is with your employer. So you're limited by whatever financial products, you know, that, you know, if it's like with Vanguard or with Fidelity, with your employer, that's all you have the choice of. Once you roll it over to your own IRA, you can invest that money anywhere. So you have more control over the investments. So it's usually done more for financial reasons than for legal reasons.
Okay, so if you keep the money in a 401k and you're sued, not that I plan on ever being sued or have been sued, it's not protected by keeping it there?
No, it is.
It's protected. The 401k and the IRA, they're both protected.
Oh, the IRA is protected too? Okay, I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. Okay, no wonder why OJ is doing so well.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to mention OJ, that, you know, whenever he had all those suits, he got to keep all of his retirement because they can't touch him. But the thing is, if it's your retirement accounts, then creditors can't touch them. But if they're inherited IRAs, so if you inherited, say, from your parents or
right,
something like that, the creditors can go after an inherited IRA because it's not your retirement money.
Oh, okay. All right. That was a good answer. I've tried looking it up and never really quite found the answer. All right, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, you know, those are interesting questions, right, about retirement accounts and stuff.
Yeah, but there's lots of complications with retirement accounts, so it's good to talk to a lawyer as well as your financial advisor to know what to do with that. You know, the laws changed. There's a big change at the beginning of this year that your beneficiaries can't stretch out an IRA over their lifetime, but they have to take
right,
all the money within 10 years of your death.
Right, and other than a spouse.
That's right.
Yeah, so just kind of a follow-up before we go here. We do have webinars this week at 2 o'clock on Monday through Friday. On Monday, 2 o'clock, Elder Law Basics. Tuesday, Legal and Financial Planning for Alzheimer's, which Jamrie will be doing in conjunction with the Alzheimer's Association. 2 o'clock on Wednesday, Wills versus Trust. Thursday, 2 o'clock, Aging in Place. And Friday, 2 o'clock, How to Plan Your Estate. We'd love for you guys to join us, and you can go to our website at www.herzoglaw.com and sign up for any of the webinars.
That's right. We'd love to have you join our webinars, ask questions, learn some new information. It's a good hour, I think. It's entertaining.
Yeah, no, it's good. And like I said, you can ask questions. It's funny. I'm just finally getting the whole, you know, raise your hand thing, because you're presenting, yeah, and all of a sudden, like, this little hand appears at the bottom. And it's like, right, I can't see you because the slides are up.
That's right. We still run into some technical issues that, but, you know, we're getting better at it and better at it every week.
We are. And even with document signings, I had a document signing this week, and the mom was in her house in Saratoga. The son was at work in Saratoga, and the daughter was at work in New York City.
That's pretty cool. You can have a lot of people on the line, right?
Yeah, and we were all signing documents together, and it was kind of funny. But, you know, and then it works, and it's totally legal. So all you have to do is be in New York City. We have to ask you to say that you're in New York City. You have to be in New York State. Right. We have to ask the person before we execute the documents, do you declare that you're in New York State? If they say, yeah.
That's right. You know? I've had people ask me if they can do it for their children out of state. And they're like, no. I said, but I'm sure in other states they have virtual notaries also, so they could go to a virtual notary in their own state.
I would think so, but we're trying to make it as easy as possible for people, because there's a lot of people that aren't getting out now. And just because you can't get out doesn't mean that you can't have documents. And there's the end of our show. So you guys have a great weekend. Take care, and we'll talk to you next weekend.
Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.